You're listening to Around Comics, episode 147.
Chicago, this is Around Comics, the Comic Culture Roundtable. I'm Christopher Niesman.
I'm Brian Salazar.
I'm Tom Caters.
And
doubling as Scotty Young this year.
And you're not.
Yeah. I'm going to start stealing from Chevy Chase.
Yeah, because
that's when you know the show's on its way down. When it just becomes a video show of me doing pratfalls while like hanging Christmas arms. That's going to be the Christmas episode, is me falling while decorating the house.
So should we give the Scotty update, or should we let him tell the story next week?
Well, I do. I don't want
to.
Yeah.
What happened to him? Did he really kill Casey?
No, but he calls me on Tuesday, I think it was, and I was kind of starting to get concerned because I figured he would call me earlier.
Here's the bus driving up. This Al's going to throw Scotty.
I'm like, what the hell, you know? What happened to him and everything? So he calls me up finally on Tuesday, and I'm like, hey, what's going on, man? He's like, hey. I'm like, where are you at? And he's like, I'm calling you from a hotel in Santa Fe, New Mexico.
What the fuck? He missed Colorado. Did he not get out that?
Oh, no. No, they got up the mountain.
They got up the mountain.
Barely.
They had some issues with not being able to breathe at 11,000 feet. Too well, and they were a little concerned of the snow.
Casey smoked. I mean, Scotty smoked, so yeah, that's probably a problem.
They weren't enjoying themselves very well, so they ended up hopping in the car
the sheer desolation of for two city folk up on the mountain.
They were a little overwhelmed by it, and
solitude.
Too much nature.
I think so. And so they got in the car, they drove to Santa Fe, New Mexico, and hung out there. And then he called me today and left me a message. I didn't get the call, but now they're in Branson, Missouri.
Oh, yeah, at the Yakov Smirnoff Theater? He has his own theater in Branson now, yeah. Not just Andy Williams in Branson anymore.
I think they're doing a tour of the Bible Belt Super Walmarts.
Yeah, probably.
Probably around there.
So I'll let him elaborate on the story, yeah. but
high altitude.
Yeah,
not good.
Yeah,
we found Scotty's weakness.
High altitude.
If we ever move the show to on high altitude, we might have to adapt.
We're moving to the top floor of the Sears Tower, folks.
That's not enough. We're talking... When we do the show from the top of Everest, like we talked about, episode 200.
Around Comics Kilimanjaro.
Yeah, when
very nice.
We climb the mountain.
Because it's there.
Because it's there, exactly.
Well, I tell you, whenever Scotty does come back, we're going to be able to talk about his month of the month club month selections.
That's a worse name.
Oh, God.
The edutainment center.
Edutainment center.
That's what we should call it.
You know, I'm at this point, I'm warming up to that. Well, Scotty's edutainment selections for this month, which is one trade, one CD, and one movie. For the trade, he has picked The Witching Hour by Jeff Loeb and Chris Pacello.
Yes.
And he's picked Open Range as his movie, starring
Kevin Costner,
Robert Duvall.
Duvall
is who
and,
I was
and is it?
Duvall.
No, not Shelley Duvall. Oh, Annette Bening, I believe.
I'm thinking of my pick, which is going to be Popeye.
Oh, very nice.
And Blast Tyrant by Clutch.
Blast Tyrant by Clutch is the CD.
And a great way to get The Witching Hour, and you still have a little bit of time, is to pick that up at InStockTrades.com. And definitely want to remind you that this episode of Around Comics is sponsored by InStockTrades.com.
InStockTrades.com is offering this month's reading selection, The Witching Hour, to Around Comics listeners for an amazing 40% off the cover price. Get your copy today for $11.97. InStockTrades.com offers a huge selection of the collected editions you need. It's your source for trade paperbacks, deluxe hardcovers, essentials, showcases, archives, absolute editions, omnibus editions, and more. All at great discounted prices. And remember, all orders over $50 ship for free.
Totally free.
So InStockTrades.com. go check it out.
There's no hidden fees.
No hidden fees.
I'm actually putting in an order with them this week. I think I'm finally going to get the Planet Hulk hardcover.
Oh.
Finally going to catch up on Terra.
Planet Hulk.
Well, you know, before I read the What If.
What If Planet Hulk? Yeah. Don't get me started on that.
I didn't read it.
I don't. Just What Ifs in general, I'm not a big fan of. I think it's like. I've never been a fan of the What Ifs. It takes away from the original
story. We will debate this
opinion.
In a couple moments,
right.
Because I am a fan of the What Ifs.
Yeah,
but
figures.
Before we get to that, I want to remind everyone that Around Comics
sense.
Is recorded every Friday at Dark Tower Comics and Collectibles, located at 4835 Northwestern Avenue in Chicago, the greatest city in the universe.
Wow, that's
if you're
that's
in
a,
the neighborhood, come on by and say howdy.
Candor.
All right, well, we'll get to our What If talk coming up next. It's time for Top of the Stack.
Top of the Stack.
That's right, it's Top of the Stack. Our chance to let you, the listener, know what we, the panel, have been reading for the last week.
Nothing. Oh, I'm lying. I read a lot of... Yeah, that was just filling in for
that's
Scotty.
Scotty, yeah, it's nothing this week.
I read a buttload of stuff this week. I was prepared.
Last week's?
You have
well,
notes?
I was a little embarrassed last
took
week.
Notes?
I took notes.
You should have been
Damn.
Embarrassed.
I was a little embarrassed.
On the show.
I know. I'm a complete
It's rough
failure.
Talking about comics and you just have three people like staring at you.
Yeah. Hey, three.
You're always just staring at me.
Well, it's, you know, it's a really gay.
And you and Scotty, just I fucking me the whole time.
Hey, the beard, Tom, you're sexy. Yeah. You're a sexy animal,
brings
man.
My eyes at it.
It does. Very nice. Very nice. No, I did read, though. I did read a lot of stuff. So.
Well, but, Tom, I'm not going to start.
No, you haven't.
I do it now.
Yeah,
always.
You always
it's
start.
Your, it's your station.
We don't want to change formats.
Oh, God.
That'd be horrible. I had a couple books I wanted to talk about, but the one that I was really, really, desperately wanted to talk about was Proof. Number one from Image Comics.
I had it in my hand this week and I couldn't pull the trigger. Time.
It's written by Alexander Grecian and art by Riley Rosmo.
Chicken.
I like its formula.
Riley Rosmo, colored by Tyler Jenkins. It is. It's sort of kind of like BPRD with Bigfoot and other cryptids or, you know, cryptozoology creatures in it. The big difference, though, is that Bigfoot is the only non-human in this organization that goes around. And what they do is they sort of investigate, you know, stuff like chupacabras and Loch Ness Monster.
Goat suckers.
Yeah, exactly. Or the Mexican Bigfoot.
Bigfoot.
You ever heard of the Big Muddy Monster from down in southern Illinois?
Have you ever heard of the Skunk Ape?
No.
I'm going to write a
black
lot of these
cats.
Guys.
The black cats
yeah,
of southern
Skunk
Illinois?
Ape's like the southern Bigfoot.
Oh.
It's like Bigfoot, except it stinks. But I would think that Bigfoot wouldn't smell good.
The aroma would not be very
it's just
good.
Bigfoot in warmer weather, I think, is a sweaty
warm.
Bigfoot.
Sweaty, yeah.
But the gist of the book is that you have this new regular person. This girl gets brought into the organization due to the fact that she was involved in stopping a bank robbery where a golem showed up to, take care of the situation. And Golem, which is a Jewish legend of a creature made out of mud that, it's a old
it's
legend.
Never a good thing.
No, it's never a good thing. And she's the only one who's sort of curious about it and won't accept the fact that everyone tells her that it didn't happen. So they draft her into it, and her partner is Bigfoot or Sasquatch. And they have to go investigate a chupacabra in Minnesota.
What? Minnesota?
Well, you go into the back matter, and there has been a chupacabra
sightings
in
everywhere.
Yeah, so it's a really basic, setup. It is sort of BPRD with Bigfoot. It's a little...
Kind of like the X-Files with
Bigfoot. Yeah, it's a little, I would say, a little funnier than... It plays a little bit more towards laughs than probably BPRD does. And there's a little bit of a difference because... Part of the joke is that Sasquatch, dresses like a person. He's been around for like 200 years and has become very like cultured. So wears really nice clothing and knows about fine wines and all these sort of things like that. And the really great part is it's also a great back matter where they talk. The writer Alexander Grecian sort of talks about his own Bigfoot beliefs. Like he doesn't. he's sort of agnostic about Bigfoot. Like, it'd be cool
maybe,
if it existed, but he's not holding out much hope
right.
for
no,
it.
And he's, breath.
They're going to have, like, columns by Bigfoot hunters in the
oh
back
my.
Of it. He gives a pretty interesting...
Very reputable...
Yeah.
Lot.
Yeah, great scientist. Yeah. He gives book recommendations in the back, which aren't all ones about how Bigfoot exists. He recommends a book that sort of disproves all the Bigfoot stuff. He recommends one by a Bigfoot believer. He recommends a couple cryptozoology encyclopedias where you can look up all kinds of sweet stuff like the sea ape and the skunk ape. Because I was big into cryptozoology for a while. Because I don't believe a single one of those things exist, but I'm fascinated by people's persistence in believing
in them
that Bigfoot exists.
Well, I was talking to Chris about this on the way up here, you know, because I know you had mentioned it that you were picking that book and
yeah.
And I was kind of into cryptozoology at one time too, just sort of. And it's like I have. Really no belief in any of that stuff,
yeah.
but I love the sort of stories about it. You know,
yeah.
it's like the legends, the urban legends,
yeah.
and the myth and all that stuff about it. It's entertaining, but once you kind of try and look at it
we
scientifically...
Have like, Google, you know, like Google Earth has like a pic. You can... If I can get a picture of me in front of my house, like, I find it a little hard that there's no decent
Bigfoot.
Picture.
Well,
still,
yeah, no
everyone's
Bigfoot
walking around with a camera these days,
right.
pretty
we
much.
Found Chris's mom on Google Maps.
That, yes, that is crazy. You know they're
but
doing...
we can't find Bigfoot.
But,
you know,
yeah, we can't find Bigfoot.
Wait, actually, did we talk about that on the show?
I don't know if we ever did mention
you know,
it.
If you go Google Maps on, like, New York and
yeah, there's, like, six
Chicago.
Cities, six major cities where they do the street-level view where mm-hmm. you can click on it and they've taken pictures, you know, of every angle, 360-degree angle of the entire route. So we were on it, and we're like, oh, like, oh, let's go check out my parents' house. So we go to it.
There's a picture of my
mom
in the front yard.
In the front yard.
I was going to say, when you talked about the Bigfoot stories, I used to, and I've mentioned this several times in the show, I used to love listening to Art Bell just because of
right.
the ridiculous bullshit on that show. But I remember once they had a guy tell a story about he accidentally shot a Bigfoot. And for the rest of his life, Bigfoot
chased him.
Followed him. Bigfoot
haunting
would follow him. He could hear their calling in the background and be like, and he would know that the Bigfoot had found him and he'd have to move. And for some reason, that story is like... But it's sort of like the criminal of cryptozoology with all the it's the criminal of cryptozoology with all the back matter in the back of it. So if you are fascinated by that sort of stuff, pick it up. They're so excited about this book that they drew 5 issues before it got picked up by Image, and they have like 5 years planned out because they're so
good. Lord,
like. So
well, there's a lot of matter
there's
that
a lot
you
of
can,
crazy
yeah,
shit
you could get
that
into
with
it, that
so,
stuff.
If I want to read all 5 years of it, so I want people to buy it.
That's a good enough
yeah.
reason. That's a good reason.
Okay. Purely selfish.
But it was good. Writing
oh, it was
good.
Great.
Art
the art
solid.
Was really. It was like the art had a nice scratchy, stylized sort of feel to it, and the writing was really good. And they played around with like time shifts. Well, I thought it was.
I was going to mention, unfortunately, the 2007 Bigfoot Symposium, the 40th annual.
Yeah.
It was this year. It was canceled, unfortunately.
Wow.
I don't know why. They didn't have any reason. I was thinking low attendance, maybe, or something. But
or they
I mean,
found
are
him.
The kids,
it was the 40th anniversary.
Maybe Bigfoot is like comic books and that they haven't been able to get a younger crowd. They're fascinated by some Japanese monster.
I think
Mothra.
Chupacabra.
Yeah.
Damn Mothra.
Chupacabra's taking over for Bigfoot,
That's
I think.
That's bullshit.
Yeah, I know. Guy comes fly by night,
yeah.
you know, sort of
goat sucker.
Goat sucker.
I want a giant hairy man wandering the forest.
With the Timex.
Yeah. Skunk ape.
Skunk ape.
Orangutan
skunk
means ape. Man of the forest.
Oh.
This is a side note.
It's a very, very, very edutaining book.
I want to get into something later on.
I knew that before.
That ties into this, but did you guys watch that show on, I think it was NBC, it was on this week called Phenomenon? All right, we'll talk about that later.
Yeah, okay.
But
I have my own. Yeah,
yeah. We'll get to that later.
Oh goodness gracious! Why don't you go next, buddy?
All right, my pick was.
This is a shocker.
Yeah, this was a shocker to me.
Get ready for the internet to be torn in half.
I'm tearing it in half. Moon Knight number 13.
What?
I know. With
didn't we leave this book for dead months ago?
This is Charlie Houston's final issue, so of course it was his best. It's written by Charlie Houston with a new penciler, Tom Coker, and colors by Dean White. And it was a looked. I don't know how many pages it was. I think it was like 45 pages or something. It's a thicker,
it looks
thicker
it.
Issue. It was $3.99, and like I said, it's the final issue of Houston's run.
Yeah.
And this Moon Knight has been hammered, rightfully so, from the beginning. It has not been good. It's been hard to read. It has just not been a good story. It's confusing.
Talk about putting it on a T and striking out.
It wasn't good. This issue, though, was really good. I really enjoyed it, and it made me consider the fact that it had nothing to do with Charlie Houston, the book was so bad. It had to do with David Finch, his sort of Baroque art in the 12 issues before it that made the book really unreadable. Because this is the art
that,
in this
is issue 13.
This is issue 13.
Okay.
Yeah. The art in this is sort of a cross between maybe like David Lark and Bill Sienkiewicz. It's like a gritty, realistic, but stylized.
Who does Punisher Max? Which I love that book.
I don't know off the top of my head.
Kind of reminiscent.
Yeah, I mean it's got a sort of gritty feel to it, but it has a little more style than a lot of the sort of photorealistic stuff you see today. Like I said, it gave me a little Sienkiewicz feel to it a little bit. And the story itself is basically sort of the tale of Mark Spector, who is Moon Knight, is decided to try and register with the Initiative. Because he wants to still be a vigilante, and he knows the only way he'll be able to do what he wants to do is to register. But Mark Spector is like bipolar and psychotic and multiple personality disorders.
Fucking crazy,
yeah,
man.
He's fucking nuts. So it's going to be hard for him to go through this interview process and get approved. So most of the story is told about him going through this interview process, but there's sort of flashbacks and things going on sort of behind the scenes as this interview is going on that lead to a really interesting ending and him ultimately being approved and becoming a registered superhero by S.H.I.E.L.D. So, I mean, it wasn't anything... I mean, what I liked about it was it sort of...
You could understand the story?
That was really nice, that I could actually understand
it. I didn't think
it.
I've been able to hear anybody give that thorough of an explanation of a Moon Knight issue without at some point going, I don't get what happened with this guy.
Well, that's what I'm amazed with, because it was a real straightforward story. I mean, it was interesting. It was, you know, it was just a good, solid Moon Knight. If this had been what the first 12 issues were...
Would have been on board.
Yeah, absolutely.
You would have gotten a Moon Knight tattoo by now.
It was really good, and I'm really kind of sorry now that Charlie Houston's leaving the book.
You don't know what you got till it's gone.
What's our life expectancy on Moon Knight?
I don't. Well, I mean, you're
still sells fairly decent. But it started off so high that it.
I mean, you're getting the new team on it is Mike Benson, who wrote the Punisher Max Annual, and Mark Teixeira is Ghostwriter is going to be doing the art. So you're getting a pretty good team coming on to it.
I like Teixeira.
And I think the biggest problem with it was, I mean, it was so hard to friggin' read.
And by the way, you can tell two baseball fans here, because I believe it's Mark Teixeira in the comic world.
Is it?
And the first baseman for the Atlanta Braves is Mark Teixeira. So it's actually Teixeira.
C.U.S.
Is it? I'm going to say Teixeira.
But that's the baseball player is Teixeira.
But it also served the purpose of, like, wrapping up the first 12 issues and sort of that whole story arc and putting Moon Knight in a place where it's like, okay, you can move forward now, which I sort of appreciated him, you know, doing that and getting everything.
If you
sort
love
of,
something, you let it go.
I know, but I was amazed. It was like I said, I wish the first 12 issues would have been this good and this concise and clearly written and understandable and enjoyable. It was really good.
Which personality did he register under?
You got to read it to find out. Okay, he didn't.
That actually is addressed, kind of.
All three of his personalities are interviewed, and it plays into. It actually plays into him registered. You have to read it. It was really well crafted, because there's things that happen in the beginning that you're kind of like, oh, what is this? Who are these people? What's going on? And then it all comes back in the end, and it all makes sense as to what was happening and why, and it all had something to do with his plan to get registered. He had a definite plan, but you don't really know that until the end, kind of, and you know, even in the end of it, though, you're still kind of like, well, is he as crazy as he seems, or is he not? But it was really.
So you
was,
ready to see? And I don't think it's going to happen for at least a year. But are you ready to see Charlie Houston give it another go?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, like I said, I'm convinced now that it was the artwork in this book and not the writing, which is hard to believe, but, I mean, it's the same writer. The story's not that much different, it seems. Why all of a sudden it's like he changes writing styles, and
other,
I don't know.
It's the other half of the story.
It was completely readable, completely understandable. I was never lost. I was never... And it was just a good, solid, sort of gritty story about Mark Spector, and it's unfortunately it was his last.
Well,
there it is.
Yeah,
he'll be back.
He'll land on his feet with that novel writing.
I think he's going to make more money.
He might be all right with that.
For mine, and it was I was telling Sal this earlier today. I thought it was a solid comic week, not a great comic week, but I enjoyed pretty much everything that I read, but nothing bowled me over. But probably my most enjoyable for this week was Triple X Zombies, and this is Crawl Space number one, and Triple X Zombies is the first story in Crawl Space from Image Comics. It's Rick Remender and Tony Moore were the story creators. Karen Dwyer does art, and this is a story set in the 70s with zombies and pornography.
I might be reaching my zombie overload. I really liked this issue, but just because I loved the art in it.
Yeah.
The story was, I mean, it's the first issue of a four-part story, so it's kind of like Suburban Glamour last week, where, like, I wouldn't say anything, like, groundbreaking happens because it can't, because it's the first issue of a four-part story. But the art was awesome.
Oh, Karen Dwyer is a really underrated artist.
Yeah. What did Tony do?
Tony did the cover, and he and Remender kind of cooked up the story.
Dwyer did the cover. I think Tony inked it or something. Or is it the other way?
No, I think
he did one of. There's two covers.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know which one that one is.
That's the Tony Moore one.
Are you sure? Because there's KD.
That is the Karen Dwyer.
Dwyer. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I haven't seen it. You called me out.
Yeah, I just called you out.
You called me out, bitch. You know, I think this is. And they've gone on the record of saying that after they're done with this, they're pretty much done with zombies. Karen Dwyer and Tony Moore have kind of made their names with zombies coming up.
Let's end it.
Yeah, and they want this to kind of be the last story in zombies.
The swan song.
And it's right in Remender's wheelhouse. Yeah. It's 1970s. You can almost hear the bad jazz music in the you know, bad fat, you know, funk
and
jazz.
And by bad, you mean bad.
Yeah.
It's premature ejaculation jokes.
Exactly. Oh, it's fantastic. You know, but the basic setup for the story is pretty cool. There's porn house, I guess you would call
porn
it.
House.
At
least for one weekend.
This real sleazy guy needs to lay down, like, you know, 40 hours of hardcore porn over this weekend.
We've all had to do that.
Who hasn't been there before?
And he owes gangsters money, that kind of stuff. So it's basically, you know, get the porn stars in this house, lock the doors, and seal yourself off from the world. Well, while this is going on, there's a zombie outbreak in California. And so they come out of this house, and California is crawling. It's crawling with zombies. So,
anybody notice that both Tony Moore and Karen Dwyer do something that I absolutely love, which is it seems like they freehand all their frames, all their panels.
Yeah,
you know, and I love that. It just to me, it just adds so much.
I really like the coloring in that book too. I thought it was really nice.
Karen's pretty awesome.
It was very well done. It was very well done.
Well
I haven't
executed.
Read it. I haven't read
well
it.
Executed zombie smut story.
Zombie smut story.
But this was, I believe, this was originally conceived as a miniseries for Image, and
rolled into the
thing. it got rolled into Crawl Space, and this is going to be the ongoing series by Rick Remender and Karen Dwyer. So it's good to see Karen Dwyer on a regular book.
Crawl Space is the ongoing.
Crawl Space is the name of the book. Triple X Zombies is the first story, but
so
it had
kind of more of a
it was original
kind of thing. Or
no, it was originally solicited, I believe, as Triple X Zombies as a miniseries.
Right.
But Rick and Kieran Dwyer have so many of these kind of nutty horror stories that they wanted to do an ongoing horror book. So Triple X Zombies is the first story arc in Crawl Space.
Are they going to tie in together? Or are they all going to be kind of independent?
I think they're going to go in like,
under the Crawl Space banner.
They're all under the banner.
That's kind of cool. I just want to understand it.
Yeah. So like after Triple X Zombies is done,
understand it, Moon Knight. Yeah.
My life would be
so the next story could be about zombie actors in the 50s or
Shakespearean
something like
vampire actors.
Cool. There you go. Rick, if you're listening, run with it.
Yeah. If you use that idea, I'll fucking sue you.
I think there's zombies is obviously kind of not done, but I think
I can't get enough.
I think there's room for good fun horror ongoing.
A well drawn, well written.
Well written.
You can do anything as long as it's well drawn and
well
written.
That's right. Mm-hmm. That's the key.
Yeah. And Remender has kind of a nice sense of humor with stuff.
He's sick.
He is sick kind of a
bastard.
Sick twisted guy.
He's a sick guy.
He's
got issues. But I love him for it.
Violent too. Let's not forget the violence.
So anyway, that's my top of the stack. So you guys just want to kind of round table it a little bit and go over?
What else you got, Tom?
I really wanted to talk about X-Men First Class.
You love that.
I love, I know, and I feel like I need to trumpet it more.
I have some very exciting news for HeroClix players regarding HeroClix.
Jeff Parker's getting his own piece.
The Jeff Parker clip.
The Jeff Parker clip.
No, I'll do this before you do your review.
Mention
but
the HeroClix portion of the show.
I'm a HeroClix player. We've talked about this before. And there's a new Marvel set coming out next month or sometime in November called Monsters and Mutations. And they are doing the X-Men First Class HeroClix. And I'm very excited about
it. There you go.
Hey, there hasn't been... Suntra, shut up. There hasn't been a good original X-Men HeroClix team in years.
Parker's Bobby, my man. I'm a big Parker fan.
Is Bobby Drake going to have an iPod? Because I know that...
No, that bothered me. That's why I don't read that book, is because
really?
They have iPods.
That, you see, now I'm going to go off on a tangent about that show.
It's not right. It's not...
Go on. I'm sorry. So you would prefer for them to be sitting around watching Dick Cavett?
Yes, I would.
And like new readers will pick the book up and be, oh, this is great.
No,
fuck's Dick Cavett?
No, this is my problem. No, seriously, Tom, this is my problem, is when books go out of their way to make things in present time.
A lot of people have iPods.
Why does X-Men First Class have to be set in present day?
Why does it have to... Why not?
Why does it?
Because people identify with that.
Do you have to
it's
have...
It's not every issue. They're not...
Do you have to make a big deal about Bobby
they
Drake?
They didn't make a big deal.
Yes,
they did. They showed a panel.
No, you made a big deal out of it.
They dedicated like two panels to him having an
two
iPod.
Two panels in like
they
13
been,
books.
That could have been...
It's not
like
every issue they're fighting over their iPods.
That could have been two panels dedicated to Sauron.
Yeah, exactly.
No, well, it's I don't know. It's just something that takes me out of the story. And
because you're an old man.
I am, and I'm...
Jesus, read it like...
It ruins my continuity,
read
Tom.
Read it like an adult, right, Tom?
Exactly, that's what I said.
Yeah, I don't know, it just takes me out
either
of the story.
Either way, I really enjoyed it, and I don't think there was any iPods or... They didn't talk about Britney at the VMAs in this issue. And their giant ass. Yeah, whenever I see people talk about like X-Books and like their favorite X-Books, I never see people mention this. It makes me sad because I don't like the X-Books, but I like this book. And I'm like, when people are like, what books are non-continuity? And I mentioned this last week in the Answer Man when someone asked me about continuity. I was like, well, if you don't want a non-continuity book, pick up X-Men First Class. You don't need to know anything about it. I mean, you're seeing, like, this issue, which was number 5, written by Jeff Parker with art by Roger Cruz, is X-Men running into the Hulk for the first time. And it's just, it's really basic and funny, and the art is nice, and the characters are likable. Which, I mean, I've never liked Iceman, but I love Iceman in this book as being really, he's really funny and acts like a kid. Yeah, like sometimes you forget. There's a tendency, I think, like with most comic book characters, that they all sort of end up being like about 26.
Mm-hmm.
because I think, you know, the age of
the writers are
sort
26.
Of, well, they are older. It's sort right. of, and you kind of lose track that certain characters are actually older than other characters because everyone looks is drawn as muscular as everyone else, and everyone is written to talk the same way as everyone
right,
else.
This is just as mean.
Yeah, so it's nice to read a book where like Cyclops is skinny. You know, and awkward. And
he lives up or down to his name, I guess.
Yeah, and it's funny. And Jeff Parker throws in nice little jokes everywhere. And I just want people to be aware that it exists.
I'm a big fan of Jeff Parker. And I think a lot of his work has been extraordinarily good and extraordinarily underappreciated so far by a lot of readers. I don't know why. Agents of Atlas.
Yeah,
which I thought was just awesome.
I think that's picked up pretty good buzz, which I'm happy. Yeah. You hear a lot of people talk. So I think that's.
Did you
good
guys? Did
though.
You ever read the original X-Men before? You know the giant size. Did,
sure.
Did
it sucks.
That? No, screw you.
They were talking about fucking CD or albums in there. Yeah, and it should have been.
I like the Neil Adams stuff.
The Roy Thomas Neil Adams stuff was really, really cool. Some of my favorite comics of all time are from that
run. The Stan Lee stuff. I'm utterly convinced that the making up of mutants was just because he got tired of figuring out reasons for people to get powers.
Yeah.
They're
just born with them.
He just, you got them. Yeah. And the story sort of reflects that same sort of diligence for a couple of years.
Maybe we're just getting to the age and maybe take for granted that people know the history of that book, but it was so close to the chopping block for so long. It went for how many issues where they were just doing reprints.
It's like a couple years, 5 years.
Yeah.
And
mouthful of sandwich.
It was Roy Thomas and Neil Adams that kind of saved that series for like a year before it went into reprints and then kind of got reinvented with Giant Size. But they were going to give Neil Adams an issue or two on that, and they ended up extending it for over a year. And I love that run.
It's kind of funny because you can imagine the X-Men ending with that because you saw them kind of pull out all the tricks, like killing Professor X, like, you know, bringing him back. Like, they were like, we need to do something.
You can see in 50 odd issues,
like, fuck, we need to do something to get people to read it.
Something, so, damn it.
Yeah, you can see an entire life of some series played out. In
well, I think I won't go into Superman, but. I said today to Chris, they should have just kept him dead. They should have just left Superman dead.
Aww.
Sorry.
A lot of lunch boxes. To
I
sell,
know.
Man.
But
that Bizarro, the new Bizarro story was good.
But you're telling me like Eric Paul and Jeff Johns couldn't have come up with a better comic to work on than that?
And Superman? Not a better Bizarro one.
Well, maybe not a better Bizarro one.
Not a Bizarro story.
Well, Mr. Note Taker, what you got over there?
I think next one I want to mention is She-Hulk, number 22.
I'm sorry, did I pass over?
No, he just talked about the...
Oh, that was my pick. I talked about it as much as you did, sorry.
Well, I
talked about
that, Jesus. Yeah, talk as much as you want.
I talked about a book I didn't even read.
Yeah.
She-Hulk 22, it's the Peter David, he just took over from Dan Slott, and I was really interested in seeing what he was going to do, and I'll say this about Peter David, when he gets his hands on a Hulk character, whether it's the regular Hulk or She-Hulk, he has no problem shaking things up.
It's a man now, right?
Almost, I think, maybe.
Maybe.
I don't know,
don't
I'm not
know.
Sure, I'm not sure from that issue.
You didn't see genitals.
Yeah. But what I did take away from, well, all right, half...
Spoilers.
Yeah, I'm gonna spoil stuff, so... first thing is, she's no longer a lawyer. She's now a bounty hunter. And
a florist.
No, just a bounty hunter. And
Judo
within, I'd say within, I don't know, 10 pages, as she's hunting down somebody in their house... Jen Walters, the Absorbing Man, sneaks up behind her and breaks her neck and kills Jen Walters. Within the first 10 pages.
Canceled?
Yeah, if you could have just seen the look on Tom's face. I think it's the same look that I had on my face at lunch today, whatever you told me. It's like,
snaps her neck.
What?
Absorbing Man just comes up behind her, crack, and dead.
So the rest of the series is her life flashing before her eyes.
And then it just gets weirder from that point forward. It just gets even stranger. I don't know I have no idea.
It's not a zombie She-Hulk, is it?
I don't know. It could be Skrull.
Well, Arthur Soydum covers for the next year of She-Hulk.
Well, I don't want to give away everything, but it's I don't know where it's going. I have no idea where that story is going, but I was intrigued by it, and I was sort of proud of Peter David of just going, fuck it, I'm gonna change
Lawyer?
Things.
Fuck it,
yeah, no more bounty hunter crack.
Courtrooms are boring.
She's alive. Fuck it, I'm gonna kill her. How many issues of this do I have to do?
Well, I will say one thing. When I finished it, I was like, all right, I got to pick up the next one. I got to see what the hell's going to happen.
I'm
going
to pick it up. Because
in between Moon Knight, X-Men First Class, and She-Hulk, you guys are killing me.
Why?
Because I didn't
read... Too much
read...
Marvel?
No, I didn't read any of those.
Oh, Proof. You didn't read Proof either.
I was starting to feel like I was reading the most comics, and you guys have dogged me.
You're like, oh, it was an okay week. You just read the wrong books, baby. Yeah. You would have said it was an awesome week if you were paying attention.
You got something else there, Cowboy?
Yes, I did.
Cowboy?
The Green Arrow Year One miniseries wrapped up this past week.
Yes,
and, it was good.
How do you feel about the modernization and that?
There weren't any iPods, so I'm cool with it.
But there was like...
The extreme sports shit in the first one threw me off.
That was okay. That's all right.
I think
extreme sports are cool.
I think this will go down as being a good mini. It's not going to be Batman Year One. It wasn't that groundbreaking. But I tell you what, Jock is a badass.
It could have been Batman Year One if Batman Year One had never come out.
It could have been.
That's all I'm saying.
It's very meta.
You know, Batman Year One was only so groundbreaking because nothing.
Why didn't you write a what if
Green Arrow Year One?
I think this is a great series to pick up if you're not a huge Green Arrow fan. I mean, I you don't have to.
If you hate Green Arrow,
well,
no, I know what you mean.
Yeah, you don't have to be a Green Arrow fan to pick. I think it's gonna. I hope this will do well in trades because first of all, I like Andy Diggle's writing. I think this will work better as a trade because there were some miss issues along the way. But I think whenever you read it as a whole, it's gonna
really?
Work.
Really? I mean, there was only six issues, right?
It kind of had the Star Trek thing going on. I thought like the first and third issues were a little weak, but then the odd issues seemed to be.
I think I was just
the even issue.
The even issue.
The Jacques art.
Jacques.
Yeah, but Jacques is. There are very few artists that capture moments of explosiveness, like and literally explosions, like Jacques does. He has a great knack for capturing that one moment, which is so important in comics.
Yeah, great
obviously.
Great timing in there in some of the scenes.
And from a graphic design standpoint, his page layouts are freaking gorgeous.
Yeah. He's awesome.
I
like all the Year One stuff. I say keep coming out with them. I mean, even if they're not, I like the idea, like we were talking a little bit before about, like, you know, trying to introduce these characters that have been around for 40, 50 years.
Give people a story that isn't...
That isn't so tied up in all that stuff, and it's like, oh, here's an origin, and it's modern. Yeah, if you're interested, you could pick it up and read
you
it.
You often hear people say, like, oh, I'm sort of interested in Green Arrow, but
where do I start?
And then then everyone's like, I don't know. You can at least say this. If you like Green Arrow,
check it out. Yeah. And it gives you enough background in a revamped way that then if you went and started picking up Green Arrow from 10 years ago, it doesn't change so much...
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
you still get it.
Yeah, you still get it. And there's not a whole lot of, changes that you wouldn't understand anything. So I like the whole Year One. And now it's like a brand. I mean, they've...
I'm really looking forward to that Teen Titans Year One with Carl Kruse.
Yeah, that looked really good.
Andy Wolfram. That three-page preview I put on.
Very nice.
Kershaw's awesome.
Kershaw's stuff is hot.
One he's thing the I, new hotness. He's the even new though he's Canadian.
Real quick, back to the art. Just one of the things that Jock does that really impresses me as a reader and as a designer. You know, he'll do things like if something is falling, he'll catch it.
Oh,
well, he'll break the box. You don't go with the straight, you know, like 9-grid system. He'll actually put panels will be off kilter. He'll draw them at an angle, and you can follow things falling through the page. He's
got great timing. He's got fantastic timing for stuff, and
he uses it.
He uses it in a way where it really lets him simplify the other part. You know, I mean, it lets him simplify his layout a lot because he uses it so well.
I don't think there are many sequential artists that design pages as well as Josh.
He's God.
He's a god.
He's a god. He's in the pantheon.
A one named god. Just like God only has one name.
He's Jock.
So, yeah. So when this comes out as a trade, if you haven't read Green Arrow Year One,
if you're curious.
Yes, I suggest it.
If you're curious,
I suggest you try.
Men in green tights.
Yeah, and you'll maybe learn if you're ever shipwrecked on a desert island. You may learn a couple tricks on how.
Not hard to become a master.
Oh,
archer.
Speaking of that, you know, I did want to bring up a point. Someone left a comment on our website about our obvious, complete stupidity when it comes to Survivor Man. Survivor Man, there is no cameraman with Survivor Man.
It was the other show that just got in trouble for it, too. Yeah, we got our show switched around. So, we got that wrong.
Somebody mentioned that to us.
We're douchebags.
Another one, which I thought was a great point.
Survive one week in my loneliness.
And I always forget this, too, whenever we were talking about horror movies, because I always think of it as a sci-fi movie and not in the horror genre. Somebody brought up, whenever we were talking about great horror movies last week, Alien. Which is
the first one's certainly a horror movie. It's just sci-fi horror. Sure. Fantastic.
So the forum calling us out on shit.
Does anyone have any other books there?
I have a couple more.
You have one on top of yours that I want to mention too.
Let's team up
duo
on that
one.
Let's go.
Double team it.
I picked up Tales
Join
of the Sinestra Corps.
Activate.
form of talking.
Form of a bucket of beer.
Yeah. Edit that out. No, I'm kidding. I picked up Tales of the Sinestra Corps Superman Prime. I had told myself I wasn't going to get any of these.
Because they've sucked.
Because they've sort of sucked, but it was written by Jeff Johns. So I was like, if the guy who's writing the main series is writing it, at least means that, like...
It's got a shot at not sucking.
It has Pete Wood's art and Jerry Ordway art in it. I picked it up, and it didn't suck. I wouldn't say it was like the greatest book ever, but I was surprised by how this was a complete opportunity for perhaps one of the worst books. And I do enjoy it. John's walked a pretty fine line in this issue of pretty much pointing out the fact that Superboy Prime is just a pissed off fanboy. He got dragged into the DC Universe. The part where he's like, Aquaman doesn't have a sword.
What are you doing with a sword, Pam?
Yeah, like fighting him because he likes the way things used to be as opposed to.
I love the.
I hope a lot of fanboys caught that.
Yeah, I don't think a lot of people.
I love the Alan Scott quote. He goes, I'm sure he was getting tired of listening to you whine anyway.
See, that's the point, though, is when you see people like, I hate Superboy Prime. You're supposed to. And I think Jeff Johns is really making him, like, so annoying and so hateable that when he eventually receives his comeuppance, people will be
cheering,
excited about it. Because, Superboy Prime comes from a universe where the DC universe is fictional, and he read the comic books when he was a kid. So he gets brought in, he's like Superman, he gets there, and everyone dicks him over, and he's trapped someplace,
it
he gets out,
quite
and no one gives a shit about him.
The most ridiculous origin ever.
Oh, yeah. Oh, because they do. Jerry Ordway, where he's like, his parents adopt him and find him in a forest, but he doesn't know that, and they name him Clark because they think it's
mother's
kind of
mind.
Yeah.
Name Clark Kent.
Yeah, and it's a very silly origin. And
come to find out later that he's actually not human. He was teleported.
Krypton. Yeah, his parents sent him to Earth before their Krypton blew up.
Oh,
so he is Kryptonian.
So he's just a pissed off fanboy who just won't. You know, he's angry because Aquaman's got his sword. Aquaman doesn't have a fucking sword.
I like the scene where they're like, "Is he crying?
Yeah,
why is he crying?
You'd cry too.
It's like, oh my god, what happened? Is he crying?
You'd cry too.
It walked a very fine line between being utterly ridiculous, but still serving enough of a story purpose that it wasn't just like a parody. Like, you can read into a lot of, and there's parts of it too where it's kind of like, sometimes you can't tell necessarily with the narration what part's Jeff Johns and what part is Superboy Prime, like at the beginning where he's like, what was it? Where I was like, wait, who is this? Is this the writer? This universe was better when I was a kid. Way better.
Well, yeah, because even in that part, you're almost like, is he commenting on how things, whose narration is this? But then he beats the shit out of himself.
And I could see how some people wouldn't like it because it's a little clever for itself and a little tongue-in-cheek. But I thought, for what it was, and I didn't
you know, the last two tie-ins, which I'd sort of looked at, I thought looked pretty bad. This was actually pretty fun tie-in to the stories.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I am going to mention a book.
Well, that would be good.
A book that is 22 pages long. Saddles. Staples, and it comes out from a publisher by the name of
with the Sword issue number one by the Luna Brothers. This is their new series. The guys who did Girls and I can't think of their other
Ultra.
Yeah, that was the other one. And this was the first issue. It's a completely new story and everything from them. And it with all the stuff that they do, they're their stories are like some of the least sort of comic book-y stories. I mean, a lot of their stuff has sort of sci-fi, but they all have a certain feel to it where it's, and it's partially because of the art, but it's like
gentle.
It's like a reality, but then something's off kilter. Just something is not quite right, and you're never sure what could happen. Or could, they really remind me of like M. Night Shyamalan movies. Where everything's real, but then you know at any point something really weird could happen.
Is there some really easy way to spoil the book for everyone?
I could, basically, it's really the first issue is really simple. I just liked how it ended, but it's about a girl who was in a car accident. She's been paralyzed. She can't walk any longer, and she's living at home still. Her older sister's moved away, going to college. Blah blah blah. She's living with her mom and her dad. And that's just sort of the beginning.
That
just
seems
sort of
normal.
Yeah, it was pretty normal.
What's the twist?
One day, all of a sudden, out of the blue, while they're all sitting around eating dinner, these two guys show up and they start demanding, or three characters show up, and they start demanding from the father that he gives them the sword. And he's like, I don't know what you're talking about. I'm just a...
Give me the sword.
Yeah. They're like, he's like, what are you...
I've had guys ask me that, too.
And they start threatening him and torturing the family and all this stuff. And he's adamant about he doesn't know what they're talking about. And so you don't know really what's going on, if they are, you know, mistaking him for somebody else and everything. And then at the end, you find out. But I don't want to spoil it, but
his
it was
arm
just,
was made out of a sword.
No. But like I said, it's just I love their stuff because it is always, you're never quite sure what direction it's going to go in.
It's always on kind of uneven footing.
Yeah, and they always just seem, like I said, they have such a different feel than a lot of comics where part fantasy almost, like, you know, mythological tales, and they tell really kind of small stories, but they feel way bigger.
What are the odds of, like, a unicorn showing up? Just, like,
in this book,
wandering through a scene.
I would say in this one...
In breaking the fourth wall and looking at you.
14 and a half
like
to
an
one.
Like
maybe.
An anime.
I don't know.
All of a sudden the unicorn looks at you.
Why are you
possible,
looking at my horse?
Why are you reading this story?
So I really enjoyed it, though, and their art's really good. Very simplistic sort of style and good coloring. And that was it. So The Sword, number one. I thought it was cool.
Well, that's, you know, talking about unpredictability. My next book is one that had heaps of predictability, but I still enjoyed it.
Heaps
of predictability.
Heaps, oh.
And that is Gotham Underground, number one, came out this week.
I really wanted to like that.
And it's Frank Thierry.
That's
and,
always a good way
and
to
Jim Calafiore.
Sorry.
Always wanted
and,
to like
and we talked about it today. Yeah. It is a book that could have been
awesome.
Really freaking awesome.
Could have been really good if it was like a max title book.
Because
awesome.
It really should be with Gotham Underground.
A Vertigo book.
I want and have wanted a book that is done from the perspective of the Batman rogues for a really long time. I think that could be.
And that's what this basically is, kind of.
But not
almost.
Really.
Well.
Yeah.
You guys can't seem like you can make up your mind here.
I don't know.
And I don't want to.
It's your pick.
I don't want to. Have it come out like I'm panning this book because I enjoyed it, but it's Batman. And this could have been any Batman book in the last, you know, 5 years. This could be Batman number, you know, 670, and of starting a new arc. There's really nothing different about it.
I was thinking about what is 670 out yet? I'm kidding.
It's just
Batman's in it, right?
Batman? No, well, actually, he's not.
Matches Malone.
But you have, right, you know, the other basic bat cast. You've got Alfred, you've got Nightwing, Commissioner Gordon, and then you've got a bunch of the bat rogues. If you're reading Checkmate right now or reading Suicide Squad, this
ties into all that. Yeah.
So what?
It in fact could be 6-7.
Oh, okay.
It has not come out yet.
Wow, you're like scary.
Well, that was there were two things about it. I enjoyed it. It was okay, but there were two things about it that I kept thinking about. One was, wow, it could have been so much better.
Yep.
And two, it was like, well, why did they have to start up a whole new book for this?
Because it's the number one issue, and it'll sell 70,000 copies.
It could have been any arc in any Batman title. And it was fine, but it could have been really... I thought the original... It seemed like the original concept of it was, you know, looking at the sort of street-level crime scene of Gotham City, which is a cool concept. It just doesn't work when it's like, golly gee whiz, Batman, you know?
I mean, do you think it's partly because... I mean, it would be a great idea to have a book about the Batman rogues that really... You wouldn't need Batman in it necessarily to be good, but because Batman could be in it, who would publish one that...
Is really hard. Cool.
Yeah, like, yeah, you could put Batman in and guarantee X number of sales,
I understand the reason.
Yeah, I'm just saying,
I'm just like, on a personal level, it's like, I wish
that's why
could.
I don't think it's ever really going to happen. It's too tempting.
Warner Brothers is never going to allow Batman to be in
DiDio's...
But even if
he's on record as saying that Batman will never be in a Vertigo book.
Right. Yeah. Well, that's what I mean. That's the shame of it, is that this book, if it was done, like I said, like a Punisher Max style or a Vertigo style where it was basically rated R and it dealt with the criminal underground of Gotham City...
Penguin.
Could be really cool.
Penguin can drop some F-bombs.
Well, yeah, you know, just a couple here and
maybe,
there.
Yeah. F you. Fuck you, Batman.
No, just, I think just the overall feel of it. I mean, because it's Batman on the book, it's always got to have a certain, I don't want to say squeaky clean, but it has to have a certain level
of... It's going to be bad. It's got to be a bat.
Yeah, you know what I mean? It's like there's only so much, only so far they're going to push anything. And
now, if you are reading Suicide Squad right now, which has been good... you may be interested in this, because this is tying into some stuff that's going on with Suicide Squad.
The Salvation
and
Run 50, miniseries
and,
that'll be
Countdown.
Coming, yeah.
It's tying in with
Countdown. Yeah, because there are... I haven't been reading... When is Salvation Run coming out?
December. Couple of December.
Okay, because there are villains that are disappearing,
yes.
Apparently.
They've been rounding up the villains.
Yes. Okay.
Right.
And sending them someplace else.
This
far away.
Another dimension.
Way the hell away. It's going to be good.
This ties into that. So if you're in Salvation Run or Suicide Squad, that kind of stuff, could be a good tie-in. I'm going to give it a couple issues. It's 1 of 9.
Yeah, like I said, so it wasn't bad. I was.
But it could have been so much better.
I just kept going, it could have been really good.
You.
It could have been really, really good.
No, not at all. Two things. Well, it reminded me of Gotham Knights, what Gotham Knights became under A.J. Lieberman, because that really became the Batman villain book. But also, your R-rated Gotham, wasn't Gotham Central kind of the R-rated Gotham?
Nah,
did the bar
but
it,
it was it was a cop story.
You had the Joker as a sniper.
Yeah,
you know, like I mean, it's like that's
it's
as cold
still,
as
still
I agree. It's not Vertigo.
I still just don't think they pushed it far enough.
No, I understand.
Doctor Freeze was like freezing cops and then crashing them into
Yeah, I mean
pieces.
that was
yeah.
cool.
That pushed it to the upper end of the PG-13. It didn't have colorful language, John.
No, it could.
I'd rather see Gotham Central as like the Shield,
yeah,
as opposed to NYPD Blue.
Yeah.
Or
The Wire.
CSI.
Yeah, The Wire.
Well, The Wire is pretty hard.
The Wire is what we want to see. Yeah. And I think Gotham Central kind of went to the Shield, where we really kind of...
No, Shield's, there's no question the Shield's an R rated.
Oh, yeah.
There's no question.
Yeah, the only thing that's I mean, the Shield is throwing an F-bomb in nudity, and that's it.
Gotham Central dealt with some pretty hardcore stuff.
Well, I thought so, too. But I understand what you're saying. And
I think
right,
it's
Vertigo,
just
it's not going to happen.
No,
it would just be.
And you know that. Yeah.
Well, I mean,
no,
I
it's, it'd be nice.
I think, fan fiction. There's always fan fiction.
Sure.
A lot of comic fans. Because I've always wanted
to sing about it in Filking.
I've always wanted like a book just about the Flash rogues. But you don't necessarily, like, I would love to see a book about the Batman rogues that didn't necessarily have to have
Batman
involved
in it,
right. You know. But you know that's
well. I think that like this book is kind of like that.
Yeah.
Batman, like
he's on the cover, big and bold.
Yeah,
and
the Batman families, and you know,
it's
like,
in there. But it's not like it's a. This isn't necessarily.
I just like seeing villains
book.
Interact with each other, but because they're not the selling points, who's gonna justify? You know. We're putting out this Flash Rogues book.
But they could do it
put
in
out a Flash Rogues book.
Flash Rogues. Jeff Johns, are you listening?
Did you like when they were doing it?
I think Jeff Johns listens.
They tried to do that. He's,
Jeff, Jeff Johns has to listen to our show because the last book, the last 6 months of DC books have been written every morning he wanted. So I don't know.
I really wish there was a Booster Gold book where Wally and Barry show up.
Bam! It's like magic.
Please.
Here it is.
Please.
All right, that'll take care of some of our general comic talk of what we've been reading for the last week. But we got some comic book happenings in the world.
Yeah, I want to talk about Zooda.com, the DC webcomic.
Sal has a problem with the names of the, the strips.
No, I didn't have a problem necessarily.
Like Zooda wasn't corny enough for you?
Just when I read them, I thought they were kind of funny that they all seem to have...
They got you hooked, though, man. Well, you know them. You know them all, don't you?
It's like, well, that was the thing that... Okay, here, I'll read the names.
First of all, kudos for DC for branching out into webcomics.
All right,
yeah, I actually was one of the one of the few people that when they announced that whole thing, there were so many people online that are just like, oh, yeah, you know, but bitching and moaning. I'm like... I think it's a good thing that they're trying to get people exposure to webcomics. They can bring way more exposure to a webcomic than anybody on their own could do.
Starting on their own, sure.
Yeah, you know what I mean? So
that's one of the things that I really enjoy about our Monday show now is our reports from Jeremy Mullen.
Oh, that fucking piece of shit.
No,
it's great.
It is.
Jeremy does a great job. He knows his...
Yeah, it's content.
I loved that last one, but the one before that.
Hey, everyone. Look forward to me recording of me in the closet that you heard on Monday in my storage room.
I'm looking forward to the bathtub of baked beans that you'll be recording from.
Back to Zooda. Here are the names of the first 10 contestants. And this has nothing to do with, I don't know the quality of any of these or anything. I just thought the names were kind of funny. Alpha Monkey, This American Strife.
Good. Not so good.
Battlefield Babysitter.
Awesome.
Black Swan.
Okay.
Dead in the Now.
Eh.
The Dead Seas.
Eh.
The Enders.
Eh.
High Moon.
I like Lois better.
Raining Cats and Dogs. And my personal favorite, Lepronomicon.
That is awesome.
That works for me.
Lepronomicon?
Lepronomicon.
Nice.
I like that.
But it was funny. It was like, well, are they picking names that actually make any sense with the book? Or are they just like picking names?
You have to think that kind of makes sense. It's a different mentality than selling an issue of a book because you're sort of. I see them sort of as how the comic strips and newspapers have sort of fallen upon, you know. I remember when I was a kid, I used to read those religiously, and a lot of, you know.
The funnies.
And sort of the readership sort of dropped on them, and this, I think, is sort of the inheritor of that sort of method. You know, where, like, the names of stuff, it just has to be memorable.
Right.
You know,
right.
More or less. It doesn't have to be descriptive. Necessarily. Yeah. I mean, like, Hagar was horrible.
The Lockhorns did it.
The Lockhorns got up, and Marmaduke was named Marmaduke. But I think it's kind of different from like a monthly series because I know some people put their webcomics out like, you know, once a week, sometimes twice a week. You have a faster turnaround. You need to.
And there's so many
people
out there.
To remember.
No,
what
no.
You're doing. I know you don't have a problem with it.
The other thing that they did announce that they had one instant winner. Because I guess the whole thing with Zooda is it's almost like it's a contest.
It's like a talent search.
You know, you have these 10. Yeah, it's a talent search, and they're going to give 1-year contracts to however many whoever win. But then they had like the instant winner already. They named one comic was already instant. They instantly gave. And I can't. I didn't write it down. Unfortunately, but you can find it on like Newsarama or whatever.
Yeah,
but it looked really, the art was phenomenal in it. It looked really cool, the instant winner, so I'll be interested to see what that's all about. But
was it a humor strip or was it an adventure?
No, it looked more like a fantasy adventure kind of thing. It was really cool looking. I mean, like I said, there wasn't much to read on it or anything, but just the couple of panels that I saw of it, it was very pretty stuff.
And I think the cool thing about web comics especially is I think where you hear a lot of people sort of complain maybe that the availability of a lot of different genres in your monthly books that you pick up at your comic book store isn't necessarily as wide
as prefer,
some people would like.
Yeah.
Web comics is sort of
Wild West of, you know, of like anything you can find. So, I mean, I know a lot of, you know, me personally, you know, like the, you know, your week, your month, your books that come out, you know, once a month. You know, there's a lot of superheroes, and then there's a mix of everything else. Web comics, you, there's everything.
Right.
You can
anything
find
you
anything you want. Yeah.
Did you guys read Steve Conley's Astounding Space Thrills back in, like, you know, the early 2000s when that was...
No.
That was a great adventure strip. And, I mean, and it went on for... He had several stories, and they were... as long as any adventure strip and stuff, and there's there's really great stuff out there for, and as you say, every genre.
John Suntress.
I think we're at a point where, at one point, webcomics were, not all of them, but I think a lot of them were viewed as a gateway for people to get into comic books, to doing comic books.
Sure.
That's why they're making webcomics, was to get their stuff out there.
Sure.
Where now I think there are a lot of webcomics that are out there for webcomics' sake. You know, it's like a lot of people that do webcomics, that's what they want to
do. Well, yeah, right. And I think they're able to then, you know, merchandise their characters in ways that, you know, anybody...
Selling ad space.
And selling ad space, sure. Mm-hmm. No, it's interesting. That panel that I ran on Newsarama, Kazu Kabuishi talked about webcomic guys that he knows that literally are making a decent living just from not only their webcomic, but the merchandising they do because of it and everything.
Sure.
So that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
And selling... You know, sell commission. You know, selling prints and stuff like that of their strips.
And good for DC for you know.
Well, a lot of people attack DC about it because it's like, oh, they're just gonna steal.
The
man has the money,
the rights to it, and you know, and it's like, well, yeah, but these people may never even have heard of. Leprechaun, if not for Zuda Comics, you know what I mean? So it's like, well, that's worth something. They're going to put the power of their marketing behind these guys' comics, and it's like, that's worth something. Now, what the contract reads or how it all pans out, I don't know, but you got to know that going into it. Read your deal and know what you're signing before you sign off on it. You know, I mean, that's what it comes down to.
It's an opportunity to make money now. I think that's great. And I think any entrepreneur that has done any type of venture on the internet would say, sure, well, I'll take a look at that contract. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. One other comic book note I just wanted to, on a personal level, Captain Marvel is returning soon, the new series, Captain Marvel, number one, Marvel.
Grown.
Is it like Prison Break?
And I just wanted to offer my condolences to Brian Reed, who I think is a fantastic... Yeah, he's just going to get killed. And guys, give the guy a break. He's a really talented writer, and it's not necessarily his fault that Marvel decided to bring Captain Marvel back. I don't know that it was his idea to do it. I don't know that he
would... Be kind to Brian.
He's a really good writer. And
give it a shot.
Yeah, give it a chance, because he... Miss Marvel is a fantastic comic book.
I think so.
And he's a really good writer, so I just want to... I just know he's going to get... People are going to hammer him just without probably even reading the damn thing.
First issue is important. Look at Booster Gold. Mm-hmm. And Booster Gold could have fallen on its face with issue one, and it didn't.
Yeah, but this is kind of a sacred cow, and
there are people still pissed about it.
Yeah.
Oh, I understand.
Brian Reed's going to be calling up Will Pfeiffer and say, Will, tell me about Amazon's attack.
But Resources had a column today about, urban legends revolving around Crisis on Infinite Earths. And they basically brought up the whole Marv Wolfman backdoor of Barry Allen being able to still be around, even though he died in the crisis. And as an aside, the guy says, which essentially is what Marvel has done with Captain Marvel.
Yeah, it's the same trick.
It really is.
Fall, yeah.
And actually, I think I'm willing to walk down the road with them with this concept, because that's fine. I mean, it is time travel. You can do something like this.
I think that's
like
the
this.
Trick they're going to use to bring Captain America back. Because they've already announced that series where Cap and the Invaders come back from the past.
They're going to make him the new Man Out of Time all over again.
Which I think is a great idea. Yeah. But
that could happen, and that might be interesting.
Maybe. I mean, I don't know. I mean, that's just, you know,
well,
theory.
But doesn't that,
what happened
doesn't
to
that technically cancel out everything that happened in the past if he is coming back from the past to be in the future?
You can write time travel any way you want,
you
really.
Yeah.
I mean, that's
get him on a cosmic treadmill, man.
But I just wanted to throw out a little something for Brian Reed, because I really like his stuff. And
I
just know that he's... I mean, it's just like...
I think it's going to be 50-50. I really do. I think,
well,
I think Captain Marvel fans
50,
will give it a shot, I think some of them will like it, and some of them will hate it.
Yeah, we'll see. And now it's going to come out horrible. Brian Reed will stab me in the back for trying to
pretend.
Well, I mean, it's tough because you're talking about a character that was more popular after he was dead than he was when he was alive.
Oh, I don't know. During the Starlin run, man, and you go back to those years.
Yeah,
he was
dying though. Well,
there's
a reason why
you kill characters.
I mean, I think he had reached his a point of uselessness by the time they did that, but there was an earlier time when you put him right up there with Adam Warlock and all the other cosmic books. I think Captain Marvel was a great book.
Was he more popular than Warlock?
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. Oh, okay. Absolutely. Yeah, they struggled.
Yeah.
Well, no, but they struggled more with, I think, getting a consistent Adam Warlock book than they did with Captain Marvel.
Yeah, because if you haven't read Starlin's Warlock, it is an awesome run.
That's a messed up. That's a messed up story. I mean, that's a great concept for a book.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
The way he talked about time travel, I mean, that was really interesting how he
For that time in comics, that is an important work that Starlin did on Warlock. I mean, that is a great run on
comics.
It was
the next step in Marvel's evolution in terms of the cosmic stuff that started with Kirby. These were the children of Kirby that
really got that first
crack. You know, if I may, Phil Hester was on Word Balloon, and it'll be out by the time this is aired.
Oh, really?
If I may.
Ding.
Yeah, exactly.
Ding.
Sorry. But no, Starlin came up.
That will be
Phil,
$200.
Well,
we'll send you an invoice.
I know. All right. Yeah, exactly. God. Well, anyway.
You guys are talking about Starlin.
Well, yeah, I was talking about Hester writing, because he's writing all these books now and stuff. And also I mentioned, obviously, that Andy Parks does the same. And he said, you know, Andy and I had the discussion that we took a guy like Jim Starlin, who was so popular for so many years, but had this stretch of about 7 or 8 years where he just couldn't find work as an artist. So he luckily was this great writer that was still able to work during that dark time. Now he's back. I mean, you look at, you know, Death of the New Gods and even Mystery in Space. My God,
it was
fantastic. Exactly. And it's nice to see because Phil's kind of attributed to something that happens to all artists where it happened to Frazetta. Frazetta during the 60s couldn't get comic book work.
He was doing a little Abner and...
After that point.
Everything's like an ebb and flow with everything where you just... Your ebb doesn't match their flow.
The market. But then I guess he says, luckily, hopefully, you are recognized for your signature style, and people miss that, and they
and
rediscover
your
art.
Yeah.
And then it's
great. I mean, Death of the New God, Starlin stuff, his art was awesome.
Yeah, it was.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
No, it's... You know.
And you, seeing Starlin at a convention, do you get the feeling that he carries a switchblade?
Oh, he's hilarious.
I don't think he needs one.
You know, he's actually, I got to talk to him in Chicago. Oming introduced me to him, which was awesome. And we had this wonderful conversation. Really sweet guy. And yeah, I'll be talking to him very soon.
He just looks like he'll kick your ass.
I like Starlin.
He's very relaxed. He's very casual.
Oh, yeah. The guy you thought was Starlin, he wasn't. We'll save that for a confession.
All right.
Is it Jim?
No.
He thought it was Jim.
We'll get to that someday. I'll tell that story.
Yeah.
My embarrassment.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's all the comic book really news I heard.
I want to mention a movie I watched this week.
Okay.
I finally watched the original Get Carter with Michael Caine.
Ah, yes.
And it was quite good.
I enjoyed it.
You know what I liked about it the most was...
Everything.
There's a tendency in crime movies to sort of make everyone in crime look really awesome and
glorify
for them to be doing awesome stuff all the time. And that movie doesn't do that at all. Where like they're sitting and watching like still photographs of porn, you know, and like one of the guys just runs like an arcade and like he bangs kind of like an ugly chick at one point. This is a crime movie where it's...
The ugly people are actually ugly people.
Yeah, like ugly people are ugly, yeah.
It's like
George
the
Clooney.
I mean, it's in that vein of the Sweeney, and that's
Sweeney, fantastic 70s British cop show.
Oh, see, we're all going to bring it back.
British
TV.
And
I'll name another British crime film that was 10 years after Get Carter, and that's The Long Good Friday, Bob Hoskins' first film of note. And
really?
I mean, you know, and Helen Mirren is his gun mall. I mean, this is this excellent crime movie it's very much the British Scarface.
Well,
it really is. It's a great film.
The cool thing about not just like how the people were unattractive at times, but like Newcastle is grim, and they'd show it as being sort of a shithole, and you know, it's not like cool like
Gotham City.
Yeah, and it's not like drug dealing. It's like porn. It's like turning out young girls to porn. You know,
it's not like Figgis. I'm trying to remember the director.
It's Mike something.
Nobody does ugly criminals like the British.
Well, this is the same director who did Croupier, which was Clive Owen's first, you know, great movie, and the guy continues to make great crime movies. So,
The other thing that really impressed me was a couple times in the film where you see Michael Caine like intimidating someone, and they don't switch perspectives. They just show Michael Caine's back, and they show the person reacting to Michael Caine, and it's sort of more frightening that way because Michael Caine's like a fucking he's a lunatic, you know, like he's not like a good guy, you know, like he's an he's there for revenge, and he sort of like tears everything apart, but he's not some like he's not a criminal with a heart of gold, you know, like he's sort of a cruel
man.
He fucks over people that help him.
Well, I remember, I remember, like I watched. I didn't even know there was an original when the Stallone remake came out. And I watched that, and whatever.
Was
and then I found out...
Was it Stallone or Travolta?
Yeah, it was Stallone. And then I went and I rented the original.
Shorty.
And I was like, oh my God, this is a lot different. This is a different kind of
much
criminal.
More hardcore.
Well, yeah, absolutely. And Caine is... he's just not a nice guy in any fashion.
One of my favorite Michael Caine movies, and it's a dark comedy called A Shock to the System. Really interesting.
I have that. Because you recommended it to me, and I got it, but I haven't watched it yet.
1980s, corporate ladder, kind of guy past his prime, and pretty much through an accident comes the realization that the best way for him to improve his life is to kill people in his way.
I think that would work.
Remember talking about
it's
that.
It's a really good dark comedy.
There's a great Michael Caine comic book movie. Remember The Hand? He's a cartoonist who is doing this Conan comic strip. There's even a comic book convention, or rather not a comic book convention, but he is speaking to like a college audience about his work.
Isn't that the one... Is that the film that Daredevil...
Which Daredevil?
The Daredevil artist.
Frank Miller?
No. Before that.
Colin?
Colin, didn't he do the artwork in that?
Oh, he might have done the storyboards for The Hand.
He was the artist.
The actual artist.
He was the artist.
That was actually his hand. I believe that's the film.
I have one last thing about Get Carter that I definitely want to fit in, is that Britt Eklund gets like a major billing in it. She's in the movie for... probably 3.5 minutes, but 2.5 minutes of it is her having phone sex with Michael Caine.
Nice.
You know, and then it's like, so, you see the credits
Academy
roll.
Award.
You see the credits roll, and you're like, oh, yeah.
It's like Animal House was a, you know, quote-unquote Donald Sutherland movie.
Yeah, but I think he had more screen time than Britt Eklund.
Britt Eklund was in one scene at the beginning where they're watching the porno stills, and then one scene later where Michael Caine's on the phone, like in the
'70s,
in like this shitty bed and breakfast, just like. Take your bra off. And, he's like, and that's like, it. And that's all she does in the movie.
It's like the Lee Marvin.
It's like the Lee billing with Michael Caine.
The Lee Marvin film, Point Blank, there's this literally gratuitous nudity scene with Angie Dickinson. And just she gets out of bed and she just starts getting dressed and she's naked. And it's like, oh, look, she's naked. Okay. And that was it. It was like, all right, fine. There's Angie Dickinson naked. Yeah.
Right, here's
and
your
back
check.
In the, like 1967 when she was still, you know, really hot.
Yeah. Here's your check. Thanks.
So that was kind of cool. But The Hand is a great film. And it,
is Michael Caine naked in it?
No, but Roger Rabbit, the guy who
Hoskins?
No, the guy who played the voice of Roger Rabbit.
Oh, the
I was going to say, where?
Killer Carvelli from Walking Back Cotter. You know,
it's all the Roger Rabbit.
His last name is, Fleischer, and I forget what his first name is.
It all comes back to Bob
Hoskins.
It does.
He takes over the comic strip, and he's writing this Conan kind of character thinking. And he's like, he doesn't think. What's wrong with you? Krongo doesn't think. All he does is he does what he does. And that's it. And he gets really pissed off. Well, he lost his hand in an accident. And the hand comes back and it's attacking people. But it has
maybe
this
that
whole,
wasn't the one. It might have been the one that Gene Colan was.
It has this whole comic book background to it. And it's amazing. And Dan Brennan reminded me. He's like, you know, that's a comic book movie. And I'm like, oh my God, you're right. It is a comic book movie. So, another great Michael Caine.
The Monkey's Paw.
I did pass over one bit of comic book news this week.
Michael Caine.
No, Jerry Robinson.
He's writing a book
man who
with Britt Eklund.
Michael Caine.
Named creative consultant at DC, which I found interesting that DC sort of brought Jerry Robinson out of the archives.
Jerry Robinson, creator of the Joker.
Robin, also.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Alfred.
Yeah,
I just thought it was interesting that they. I mean, it just seemed like an odd story. I mean, nothing against Jerry Robinson, obviously, but I mean, he's an old.
Well, he's 85 years old.
85-year-old guy yeah. that they...
I went to work for and Bob Kane in 39.
And we were talking, like, maybe it's a way for them to sort of pay him tribute mm-hmm.
yeah,
now.
But I bet we'll see some essays in the front of some Batman books. I know Bob Greenberg is working on a new Batman encyclopedia. And so maybe there is a reason to have Jerry Robinson on retainer.
I'm just pretty interested to see what they are. I mean, I think either way, it's like it's cool to me. Yeah. It's like whatever they're doing, whether it's just they're trying to give him a little tribute or they're actually wanting to use his knowledge and wisdom. Either way, that's pretty cool of DC to take a guy like that. And,
oh, absolutely.
You know, I think that's awesome. I
mean, have you heard him speak yet? He's. I don't know if you guys saw him speak in New York, if you had the opportunity.
I've heard he's still just sharp as a tack.
Yeah, I mean, it's like Eisner. I mean, everything's fine. Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. So he actually, I bet, has a lot to contribute.
That's
and
awesome.
Is a brilliant man and is a guy, the guy responsible, if you'll remember.
He's an architect of the DCU.
Well, but one of them, and I'd say was responsible for one of the guys responsible for getting Siegel and Shuster their money back in the day as well.
Oh.
So, I mean, he's had a wonderful career, but it's nice that they acknowledge him for in this capacity. I bet that's really.
I said, I mean, either way, whatever it is, I mean, even if it's just a sort of tribute kind of thing, either way, I mean, I think it's great that they're doing
it. On the payroll.
I mean, there are a lot of guys like that that, as fans, we maybe have never even heard of or don't know their history of what they've done for the industry and how they paved the way. And it's like it's cool to think that. The publishers are going to recognize that and either use them in some capacity or at least, give them some sort of...
Do.
Well, I also think with the Dark Knight film coming out, I remember guys even like Chuck Dixon who made money from the first Batman mm-hmm. Begins. They got checks for it.
Denny O'Neil.
Really? For concepts and stuff. Yeah. Yeah. Which surprised me. So I bet this is going to allow them to compensate Jerry Robinson for obviously creating the Joker.
Wow.
So I bet there's another way.
Well, I think
in your discussion, that's something.
I think a lot of that comes down to the fact that I think Paul Levitz is really big into making sure everyone gets their credit for.
I'm really glad you mentioned it because he gets so much shit. He really does. And man, you guys,
undeservedly.
The guy, just like Roy Thomas, is a guy who came from fandom and really does care. And when you do get to hear him speak from the heart as he did in Chicago,
I think
this
that's
year,
what people kind of
cool
forget about him is like they look at him almost like he's a suit.
Right.
Which he is, but, I mean, it's like, yeah, but he was...
He's a fan.
Yeah, It's like, I think people don't realize that or forget that or something. And like you said, when he's talked in Chicago at the Batman panel, you really saw what, sort of his passion and dedicated to making really, his best stories that he can.
Or that generous move he made when, someone brought up, hey, I'm blind, I really enjoyed Infinite Crisis, Crisis, are you going to, the rest of the story? Or actually, you read Infinite Crisis, were they going to do 52? And they didn't have an answer, because that really comes from Warner's book department. But Levitz is like, I had a friend who we would read into a reel-to-reel tape, and give those tapes to a friend who became blind and was a comic book fan. And he said, if other people would like to do that, he goes, I really have no problem with it, which is pretty cool for the publisher at DC to say, our copyright material, go ahead and read it for the blind. It's cool. I mean, that's really nice.
When are we
going to
get transcripts of your show, though?
Dick. Paul Bell Levitz. He's coming. He's like, hey, got a little snowball for you, son.
Take that. Whack, Johnny.
All right.
I want to talk about...
offer up transcripts of your show.
I don't know what you're talking about. I'm sorry. Mr. Suntress, there's no more comments for tonight.
Sorry, Louis Ossie.
I wanted to talk about something that was truly awful this week.
We're going to end on a high note.
Phenomenon. This is the new...
Phenomenon was not phenomenal.
No, this is bad. This is the new show. It's a new show on, I think it's NBC, and it's basically the American Idol for illusionists and mentalists. And it was
tricks
hosted...
are something whores do for money. Joe from
is Kreskin in it? If Kreskin's not in it,
it's Uri Geller.
Yes.
And Chris Angel, the mind freak.
Mind freak.
Oh, God, I'd like to beat that guy with a baseball bat.
My 13-year-old nephew loves that guy.
He does awesome illusions, but he just annoys me. So basically the concept is they have your Uri Geller and Chris Angel.
It's Uri.
They're like the judges for these 10 or however many illusionists.
Oh, I thought it was against the two of them.
No. They're just judges.
You saw a woman in half, I'm going to saw her into quarters.
Yeah.
Dude. Exactly.
And the first episode was like the first five guys, and they each did a bit. And they had three celebrities there to help them as, like...
Was one English?
Doug Henning?
No, it was Carmen Electra, Rachel Hunter, and then some really annoying high-pitched gay guy. I don't know who he is. I've seen him. I've seen him before. No, younger than that. Okay. I've seen him before.
The ghost of Paul Lynch.
But younger. But I don't know who he is. I think he might have been on a reality TV show before. Something. I don't know. But
he's not younger.
So each of these guys do their trick, and then Uri Geller and Chris Angel comment on it. Just you know, and it was so
wonderful.
I watched it because I am a big fan of magic. I've always been interested in magic
Marshall Brodeen next to us.
I've always loved it.
He does card tricks in the office.
I have always. You know, try to do some little magic tricks and stuff.
What's
I've always
behind been, your ear?
Here, lick this and put it on your forehead.
But I mean, it was so that's bad good. Because the thing, they present it like we were talking earlier,
like
it's real, yeah. But then it's like it's a reality TV show, but it's real. I mean, they did it all live. You know, so this is a live presentation. These are be completely silent because if something you know could go wrong, they would lose
the incantation.
Like, these are jokes. These are
you fucking suck.
See what I mean?
And I will say there was two guys that did some pretty interesting tricks. Nothing really mind blowing.
Some Arrested Development job level.
Yeah, I mean there were a couple. Of
Final
like,
Countdown.
Well, the thing was like three out of the five. I went. Well, that's I know how
that.
Yeah, I figured it out as I'm watching it. Like I, that's so.
Maybe Will Arnett on that show. Then it would be a good show.
Yeah, then it would be. but it was god awful. I mean, it was so bad, and it drives me nuts. Like you were saying before, Tom, it's like Uri Geller is one of those guys that like for 30 years has been trying to convince people that what he does is real.
Yeah, it's real.
That he's a mentalist. That he can really do this.
Bend spoons with his mind.
And this is the thing. There's a guy out there who's like a scientist, I believe, and he goes by the name of the Amazing Randy.
Oh, Randy.
I can't think of his last name.
I know of him. But he's great. Yeah, he does all the same
shit.
He
can do all of it. And he spent the last probably 20 years trying to debunk any of these guys.
Yeah.
And he actually has a foundation set up.
Yeah,
that has
Randy, I listen
I
to him
of,
all the time.
Yeah,
he's
great.
Like Michael Knight has a foundation.
No,
as
he
well?
Has he has this foundation where he's got like $2 million in an escrow account that he will give anyone
to prove like a
to
real
prove anything
well,
ESP telecom anything.
That's
and he has challenged Uri Geller over and over again
to prove
do
that
it
works.
To prove it, and Geller won't
no way.
Do it.
I'm you going to Branson next week. Are you nuts?
But it's like I mean, that stuff drives me nuts. That and, like, why is it every magician has to have, like, personality now? Like, they're, you know, mystique. It's like, just do your trick and shut up.
Showmanship.
But it's bad showmanship. It's horrible.
If Barnum were alive, he'd slap your face and point you to the egress.
I mean, I think what's his name? Chris
Angel?
No, not Chris Angel. I'm sorry.
Isaac?
No, the other guy.
He's
the other street magician guy.
David Blaine?
David Blaine.
Yeah,
but
now
one of the best.
Yeah, where is he in this show?
One of the best close-up magicians ever. I mean, the guy does
card tricks,
hand sleight of hand stuff. To do that in front of someone with like a crowd sitting around you is really hard to do, and he does some phenomenal stuff. But then all of a sudden, and he just came out like t-shirt jeans, was on the street, and he would do his tricks, and they were mind blowing. But then all of a sudden, it became like. Stunt devil, you know.
I'm Jesus.
I will resurrect myself after burning to a sin.
I'm going
to
climb into a sphere of water.
Yeah, can't
you
just
not a fucking
in Times Square?
Trick.
You know, it's like can't you just do?
He ran out of
and,
tricks.
You know, yeah, I know.
Where have you gone, Harry Blackstone?
He changed his format.
Well, Houdini was a guy like Houdini, probably the most famous magician ever. I mean, he was a guy who always, from the beginning, said, these are not magic tricks. These are things that I can do because I've worked hard, I'm athletic,
they're
smart, and I know how to do it. And anyone can do it, they just don't know how, and I figured out it. But he never,
shoulders.
You know, it's like he never...
Tricks are something whores do for money.
Exactly.
Harry Houdini, 1926.
Yeah.
Job. Tricks are something whores do for money.
So, Phenomenon was less than
don't
phenomenal.
Get a second chance.
It was awful. It was
that's
so bad.
Hilarious. Well, that's so disappointing. Because I'm a magic aficionado as well, but it looked too creepy.
It was bad. It was...
Well, we'll end on a high note. What?
One more thing from Phenomenon. So they try and do, Uri Geller's going to do a live trick to the audience watching on
cool.
TV. So it's like, and it's a really...
Where'd he bend?
It's one of the worst goddamn illusions ever. Basically, he shows you five symbols, and then he's going to project the one that he wants you to pick in his
on,
to
on
you.
The wall or whatever.
No, he's going to project it into your mind as you're watching the television set.
Okay.
And so he does it in the beginning of the show, and he seals it in an envelope, and he puts it in a box. At the end of the show, they show it, right? And they take a poll. People went online or called or text messages.
You called for 75
yeah,
cents.
Exactly,
you
yeah.
vote for what?
And here were the
here
results.
The trick is you lost 75 cents.
Yeah.
And I have it.
The results were America picked the right one because it was 28%
nice.
Of the voting, while everything else was like 17, 25, 20. But they got the right one.
Yeah, so 67 people called and one guy made it, tipped it over to the right way.
Exactly. Nice. Christ. So there you go.
Well, on a high note, yes. After 3 weeks, Pushing Daisies, still good.
Pushing Daisies.
I'm amazed. I know.
Oh,
I know.
Fuck you! I'm not watching that show.
It's a
I'm
good
so
show.
I'm sick of hearing about it.
It's a
and good,
good show.
News, they have...
I've heard.
They've signed them up for...
Nine
the,
more, at least. The back
yeah,
nine.
We'll
nine.
Have... We'll
as
have,
Bob Hope would say, it's a back nine, ladies and
we'll have
gentlemen.
A complete... First season of Pushing Daisies, at least. So, and after
so we'll have something to watch on the Sci-Fi Channel when it doesn't work. But
exactly.
It's a, just like Now and Again. Now and Again was a brilliant show.
You know
it
what?
Didn't make it.
That show may be good for one season. And that may be all they
right.
got in them.
No,
and
I
that's
understand.
Cool. That's
no,
fine.
I agree.
But we're going to get one season and three episodes in. I like it.
No, I think
it's
so,
good.
Too. It's very funny
yeah.
and it's
smart.
Cute.
I got no problem with it.
Oh, the cute.
It is cute. It's
it
really,
is very
it's,
cute.
It's, but
you
it's
know,
sickeningly.
It is. This is my own issue with the fact that
it's
there's
cute.
So many podcasts now
it's
talking
really
about
clever.
TV shows. Like, I have seen one episode of Pushing Daisies, and I don't want to watch anymore because
everybody
I just
talks.
Hear...
Quit listening to podcasts.
Everyone, I can't because I'm at work, and I have nothing to fucking do.
Are there any other new shows that have stuck with anybody?
BSG.
Sal. Doesn't that suck? It's not going to be back until fucking April.
I'm on
he
the first
care.
Season. I don't
he's
care,
finally,
man.
He's finally,
catch up.
Finally okay. watching Battlestar Galactica.
I refuse
I'm
to watch it.
Doctor
I
Hugo.
Had no interest in it.
Honestly, I understand. I felt that way about Babylon
like
5. And I got to tell you, I realized in how wrong I was.
Chris
Krasinski's brilliant.
Chris
you know,
just keeps telling me how good Battlestar Galactica was. It's a great show.
They don't give Peabody's the shitty shows, man.
And I didn't watch it.
Simple Life did not win a Peabody.
It wasn't even a matter of the fact. It wasn't even the fact that it was a good or a bad show. It was a sci-fi show. And I just really had no interest in another sci-fi show. I'd watched a lot of sci-fi when I was a kid, read a lot of sci-fi. I just had no real
so how
interest
far into
in
it. Are you?
I'm only like six episodes into it, but I'm hooked.
You know,
I mean, that's I'm done.
I was kind of like the miniseries. I was like, all right, it was okay.
Had some
but
issues,
that first
had some
episode,
problems.
30,
oh, fantastic.
33
yeah,
minutes
yeah,
or whatever the hell it was
yeah,
called,
great.
Immediately sucks you in. And it's like... That's just, if you don't like that episode, you're not going to
yeah.
like the show.
Oh, yeah.
If you do, you're not going to be disappointed.
No, I'm six into it, and I'm hooked on it now.
You're
going to
love
fantastic.
It.
I'm
going to
love Doctor Who now.
Although
I finally started watching the new
really?
Doctor Who.
Really?
Are you, with
are you at?
I don't
you
know if I can make that
I'm watching the DVDs.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, and public television, depending on what is on my DVD.
Eccleston's great, but I got to say, Tennant is excellent, too.
I haven't got to the
I don't know if I can jump on the Doctor Who. I never liked Doctor Who.
Some a lot of them are good. A lot of them
son
are.
Of a bitch.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. There's and yeah.
There,
I mean they can't escape. They can't escape its past. So yeah. If you didn't like Doctor Who, I can see reasons not to like this again.
I do have
but
some,
I think it's an excellent show.
I do have some issues with Battlestar Galactica though.
Oh,
there's
sure,
some problems
sure.
with that.
We'll
show
get into that.
Too. There's some things that are like I can't. I just can't buy certain things that happen. And Starbuck annoys the shit out of me.
Well, she'll grow on you. Yeah. Like
I
longest.
Hope so. But she annoys
like,
the shit.
Yeah, but I like Edward James Olmos. It's my
he's,
shit.
Yeah, he's good. Trisha Helfer, I'd fuck over 50,000 people for Trisha Helfer myself. So
she,
I can understand.
Honestly, as hot as she is.
Or whatever his name is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Baltar.
Yeah, Gaius.
As Baltar. Hot as she is, though, she actually shows some real acting chops.
No, yeah,
she,
no,
oh,
she's good. That's the thing that actually amazes me about her is like her every scene is just her being sexy, but she's actually a good actor. I mean, she's. You know, she has no problem, like, showing off and, you know, everything.
Sure.
But she's a good actress. No, there's no question
David
about
Icke
that.
David Icke and Ron Moore have said in the commentaries, they're like, she continues to amaze us, and this literally is her first acting job. And the range that she shows, and he goes, we will give her things, and it's like, I don't know, do you think she can handle it? And he goes, she nails it.
No,
every
she's
time. They,
good, yeah.
they are really in awe of her as an
yeah.
actress.
And as that as the show has gone on, she's had to kind of expand. She's not just the sex object.
Oh, no.
She's actually a pretty important part of the plot. So, We'll talk about BSU next week a lot.
All right.
Let's wrap this puppy up.
Okay.
Sal, why don't you let people know how they can become friends of the program.
Oh, as we frantically flip through pages.
Go to aroundcomics.com where you can download and print out our LCS Challenge flyer. Ask your comic shop manager or owner if they will display it in their store. If they do, send us an email. We'll mention you and the store on the show as well as post on our site. Become friend of the program. Actually, we have a guy who emailed it. I gave you that, damn it.
Oh,
it's your fault.
Yeah, there's someone that did this, and we mention you next week, we promise.
Where is it at?
I don't even remember. Okay. We put him on the site.
I tell you what.
It's the guy from Illinois, right?
I don't remember.
We put him on the site,
and we never mentioned him on the show, and he emailed us. He's like, hey, I don't want to mean to be a dick, but mention him.
We're being a dick again, aren't we?
Well, let's pad for a second.
iTunes reviews. We haven't gotten any in a while, and that makes Chris sad.
Makes Chris sad.
So you should, if you haven't written one, if you've already written one, but
even
would like
it,
to start a
if
different
you hate
account.
Us. If you hate
yeah,
us
if you
now.
Hate
what
us, I don't give a shit.
Different account.
Yeah, I don't care.
Actually,
if you
it
hate
doesn't
us.
Work. I've changed my username, and it just right. transfers over to
you know,
the
I don't really care if you write us bad ones. So if you hate us.
They're fun to read.
If you hate us, I'm questioning why you are listening.
Yeah, you got a sickness or something. Yeah. You got issues.
I think you love us.
You hate us, but you can't get enough of us.
Give us 3 stars. Come on, you know you want to.
We'd like to remind everybody that this episode is sponsored by InStockTrades.com. InStockTrades.com is offering this month's reading selection, The Witching Hour, to Around Comics listeners for an amazing 40% off the cover price. Get your copy today for only $11.97. InStockTrades.com offers a huge selection of the collected editions you need. All at great discounted prices. And remember that all orders over $50 ship for free.
You know what also is free?
What?
Emotional support.
Yeah, sometimes.
Sometimes. And we're proud to offer help support the Hero Initiative. Hero creates a financial safety net for yesterday's creators who need emergency medical aid, financial support for essentials of life, and an avenue back into paying work. It's a chance for all of us to give back something to the people who have given us so much enjoyment. For more information, visit www.heroinitiative.org or call 310-909-7809 and ask what you can do for somebody else.
Yeah, quit being a selfish bastard.
Did you find out who it was?
Nah, I can't find it.
We'll get it next week.
I was also going to mention something else that was on a forum that Hero Initiative just reminded me of. Steve Bryan had posted something about donating money for schools to buy graphic novels.
Yes.
And at the time, I completely didn't pay attention to it. And then I just did, and I donated some money. And I think other people should, too, because I was reading the descriptions. I donated one in Chicago, actually, but someone wanted to buy Mouse and Persepolis. For the classroom. So I donated some money. So if you go into our forum and look for that, I think that's a pretty nice thing.
I would, but I'd be afraid they'd buy 8-Ball.
8-Ball? Yeah, well, Mouse is just from one point of view.
That's true. Not very sympathetic. That's all.
All right. Well, for Tom, Sal, Mr. John Suntress,
howdy, everybody.
I'm Christopher Niesman, and you've been listening to Around Comics.
Yeah,
as if you didn't know.
You've listened to this whole show.
Did you change
you've gotten
the whole
to the end and thought,
what is wrong with you?
This lost podcast.
I'm lost.
Sucks.
Yeah, really.
Yeah.
They didn't talk about Harry Potter once.
Tom and I are going to start an Always Sunny in Philadelphia podcast.
Yes, there you go.
We're doing that next week.
I'm doing the Top Chef.
Top Chef.
Hey, they're here in Chicago.
No, that's cool.
Marta saw them at the.
I'll be doing all kinds of podcasts.
You'll get laid.
And I'll be doing
that.
Remember Kukla, Fran, and Ollie. A Fine Nostalgia podcast.
All right,
everyone, have a fantastic rest of your weekend. We'll be back on Monday with another episode of Around Comics, the Comic Culture Podcast.
Just another episode is enough.
Okay.
It's a bit much.
In the meantime,
in between time,
we'll be everywhere in and around.
Scotty can't handle high altitudes.
Would like to suggest a topic? Send us your comments or are interested in becoming a panel member? Email us at info@aroundcomics.com or visit the Contact Us section of our website. Music for the show provided by the Podshow Podsafe Music Network. Music.podshow.com. Views expressed in the interviews or by guests of the show are solely those of the individuals expressing them and do not reflect the opinions of Around Comics. Thank you for listening today, and remember to join us next time when the panel will change, but our mission will stay the same. Bringing you the very best news, reviews, and opinions in and around comics. Around Comics is a Pipe Dream production. Copyright 2007. All rights reserved.
Love you, babe. Yeah. Why you got my love and left me alone? Why you got my love alone? I know that you don't love me. One more time.